And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie back with you. We're back with Crow. We will take calls with Crow this hour. Crow, would you consider yourself a truth seeker, investigator, journalist? How would you categorize yourself?
I've been a bit of all of the above. I even attempted to write news articles to see that if I could put actual, true, factually based news into the world. And I couldn't do it because one of the rules put in place was that you had to have two trusted sources back up what you were reporting. In other words, if I discovered something with my telescope or some other news for the first time, it was impossible to put that into the stream of news going out online. But more than anything, I just want to know the reality of things. I don't want to take people's word for it anymore because I've found too many times that what I've been told is incorrect. I kind of feel like every human being's birthright is to understand truly where it is we exist. I mean, how can it be all us human beings here? None of us know how long we've been here, how we got here. Many are starting to question the description of what here is. These are the things that I kind of feel are a human birthright. So that's why I do what I do.
Some believe the planet is 6,000 years old. What do you think?
I think I applaud people who are challenging and trying to use logic and reason to vet what they've been told. If they don't agree with where I'm at, I'm not going to pick bones with them. At least they've taken their God-given ability and tried. And the longer you do that, the better you get at it, by the way.
Some people believe the planet is flat.
Can you tell them they're wrong? I've never been to space and looked back.
I base it on pictures I've seen from those who have taken them, and I assume we have to trust them. So here's my big question to you, Crow, and then we'll take some calls. Do you challenge everything you hear or some things you hear? How do you categorize it?
I suppose at this point we try to aim at things where we can get good, solid research in. I like to choose topics where I have a lifetime of learning because I've been researching in one way or another for all of my adult life. I questioned things when I was young. But topical events are good things. But basically, things like nukes where there's this belief just based on what you've been told. And when you begin to go look at the facts we've been presented with, there's a hole in your bucket. And that's a problem. And when you start to realize these big unquestionable events are not what you thought they were, what you start to realize is how we got here. Basically, people listen to Walter Cronkite, most trusted man in America. Anything he said did not need vetting, and that was a mistake. You know, your government, anything they tell you, that's what's true for me. That's a mistake. A human being is above the animals, and part of that is free choice. But the other part of that is what we can do with our minds. And if we do not vet things to validate their accuracy, then in my view, we're falling short of what it means to be a human being.
If I told you something, are you going to trust it or are you going to go out and check it?
If I have a basis or a reason to accept it for now, I will. If I don't, I'll put it in my back pocket and I'll save it for a time when I can try to vet it.
Interesting. All right, let's take some calls here for you. We'll start with Mary in New Jersey. Hey, Mary, welcome to the program.
Thanks, everyone. You're going to think I'm crazy, but I'm going to tell you anyway.
Not on this show. You know that.
I still believe from my childhood that, I have to say, God's representatives had a rocket ship, picked up Enoch. They're riding around for over 1,000 years because Methuselah lived like 969, then he had a son, and then Noah. And they did go to the moon, and they exploded it, and that's where the excess water came to the earth. Now, you go to the book of Revelations, there's an angel wrapped in a cloud with the rainbow on his head. His face is like the sun. His voice is like a lion. His legs are really hot, and his feet are brass, and he's carrying a little book. So I pictured, always did from childhood, picture this angel sent down from God. He's standing where the water should be and where the earth should be. And what he's doing is turning that water into steam, and it's going up into the clouds, and he's taking all the excess water off the earth because the earth had water in the earth and on the earth, and that's what belonged here. But all that excess water, they were waiting for it to reside, to come out of the ark. So he sends this angel, and he takes it back up. Now, I'm wondering if he's dumping it I wonder if he's going by the moon and depositing it. I'm just curious. Or Saturn or whatever. But that's an angel. It's in the book of Revelations.
Interesting take. Well, there you go. What do you think, Crow?
Might be a bridge too far for me. I try to lock down to common sense, and I would point out that the book of Revelation, you could get 100 people in a room and ask each what it means, and they would probably each have a different definition.
Sure.
I try to lock myself to common sense, but people are entitled to go where they will in this world, aren't they?
How do you think life started in terms of human life?
You know, that's the gazillion-dollar question. How can we all be here and not understand how did we get here? How long have we been here?
Other than the religious explanation, which, you know, I don't think we need to take. I think that we need to look at it as a science, first and foremost.
Well, I think, you know, science aims for logic. The problem with science these days is it's become a bit of a religion, hasn't it? People just kind of believe in things without proving them out one way or the other. As a matter of fact, if you're in certain vocations, if you challenge the party line, it could mean your employment.
Sure, that's true. Do you believe in a higher power?
Absolutely. I think all beings are spiritual. And,
me too.
When you begin to question and realize more about where we exist, the natural explanations don't do it for me anymore.
Next up, Joe in Long Island in New York. Hey, Joseph, go ahead.
Yeah, hi, Crow. Fascinating. Two areas of questioning. First would be with the chemtrails, that would bring some environmental wreckage. So I'm not so much asking about global warming. I actually want that. I want an endless summer. But, you know, as far as, you know, stuff like Fukushima, plastics, air pollution, water pollution. Do you think it's underreported or exaggerated since, you know, it is in the media today? And my second question would be, you mentioned Wernher von Braun. I don't believe Hitler was, the story is true about his ending. I believe he, whatever happened, that's not what happened to him, the conventional wisdom. So I'd ask you about that. And also,
well, you said two, Joseph. You said two. Now you're into three.
Okay.
You're losing me, Joseph. Give me the end of the first one, please.
Okay. In other words, the environmental damage out there, what do you think it really is?
Got it. So you asked whether it's over or underreported. From
right.
My experience, it depends on the source. If you're looking at, you know, coast-to-coast international cable news, you're getting the side of things. You're not getting a fair shot. That's my point of view. But if we go back to the oldest texts that we can get our hands on that deal with things like alchemy or the natural sciences that preceded things like chemistry and the science we have today, these were sciences that only achieved within the scope of nature. They would not go beyond what nature would allow. There was a deference, a respect for a creator and this natural world. And what alchemy teaches us is all created things will see their end. And what it further teaches us is that one element or philosophical principle will become another thing, another thing, another thing, which is another proof we use to show that there is no button that could destroy this creation. How close did I come there for you?
And what about his other question, of course, chemtrails? What's your take on chemtrails?
Well, this is a heck of a thing, because I had been filming them before anyone would realize. They just thought it was normal, and I was shouting from the treetops, this is not normal. I've been outside my whole life. It even got to the point where in 2008, when I was trying to write the news articles I told you about, China admitted that during the Olympics, when it was there, they had a weather modification.
Oh, they admitted somebody had asked the Chinese, what about the bad weather we might have? And they said, don't worry about it. We control that.
There you go. So over here, people weren't so open-minded to those ideas and couldn't imagine it, and yet they caused a blizzard in China in 2009, cost billions, and they took full responsibility. And here I was filming the geoengineering over our own skies, and no one would buy it, which doesn't matter one bit anymore because it's been fully admitted that that's part of what's going on now. And then, of course, there's all the heavy metals and everything that go along with it.
Have you investigated the Crow HARP up there in Alaska?
Yes. As a matter of fact, I was a radio operator in the Marine Corps during the first Gulf War. So maybe I have a bit more experience. But A lot of that's been admitted too, the hyperheating of the ionosphere with radio waves. But what most people don't know is I have seen sources that claim there are hundreds. See, most people think the HARP thing ran its course and got shut down. There's actually evidence out there that there are hundreds and hundreds of these antenna installations in every country that's got any power. You got to imagine if they're manipulating weather, why would Russia sit there and watch us do it? Why, you know, all the big boys are going to get in on the game, aren't they?
Absolutely. My Navy unit got called up to a Desert Storm in 1991. I had just retired like a month before that.
I remember, George. I was in Okinawa, and it was that was what was so weird. The people that went into theater, and I use that word carefully, were almost all reservists. We were in Okinawa, and we saw so many reservists just coming and going straight over. Strange thing.
Yeah, they took a lot. Next up, we've got Thomas in La Jolla, California. Tom, go ahead.
Hi, George. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Great information. You know, I'm reminded of the French philosopher in the 1960s named Guy Debord, and he talked about the politics of the spectacle, and he said all news is spectacle. You know, it's all manipulation. It's all theater, as you just stated.
Agreed. Using the Agreed word. Wholeheartedly.
Yeah. I wanted to pursue the no nukes thing. I mean, several people have also contended, like you have, that the whole nuclear bomb scenario just does not make sense. For example, Enrico Fermi was a physicist on the Manhattan Project at Los Alamos. He had a daughter who was a photographer named Rachel Fermi, and she took photographs, you know, in and around Los Alamos. And you can Google the photographs. But one of the photographs was where they exploded the first atomic bomb. And it was up on a platform out in the desert there near Alamogordo. And, you know, of course, the narrative was that the atomic bomb created 6,000 degrees of heat. It was hotter than the surface of the sun, and it turned the desert to glass and that type of thing. That was the narrative. But then you look at her photographs, which were a few hours after this explosion, and you see the platform that the bomb was on is still intact, and you see cactus, cholla, uncharred, all the way up to the platform, you know, and you know, there was obviously something happened there, but it wasn't what was described, and things like the Nagasaki and the Hiroshima missions to bomb, you know, the crews that crewed those airplanes, they practiced 1 year before in the Mojave Desert, and every 48 hours they had to drop a 5,000-pound bomb from 6 miles up from their B-29s, and the bomb had to land within a 100-foot diameter on the desert floor, which doesn't make sense. I mean, you know, a bomb of that capacity, I mean, who cares? You know, you just push it out of the bomb bay and it destroys the city. But they had to, without fail, be able to drop a bomb from 6 miles up, 5,000 pounds, and have it land within a 100-foot diameter. And so anyway, I just bring out all of these things. There's just other researchers like Bruce Cathy out of New Zealand also states that, you know, there's no real evidence on nuclear bombs, et cetera.
That's right.
So I was wondering if you'd comment on that. Do you think it's all spectacle, that it's all manipulation of the news to keep us in deep hypnosis, so to speak, to not really question, you know, things about the whole nuclear scenario? Or like you said, you know, the idea of a firmament, you know, the moon landings, etc. I believe we went to the moon, but I think the videos and the photographs are heavily doctored, you know, in my opinion. But then again, maybe, like you said, maybe we didn't go, you know. So I was wondering if you'd comment on that, the politics. optics of
there's a huge problem with, you know, people say I want science. I'm a science guy. And one of the things about science is things have to be replicated and they have to be peer-reviewed. What we're talking about here was none of those things. These were controlled environments, and the message you got came from one source, and there are endless flaws and holes in it. And by the way, if we went to the moon, that's an amazing achievement. Why would there be any need to lie about an amazing achievement? What's worse is we could count that as one of the most important endeavors of humankind, leaving this world supposedly, and yet we lost all the video, no longer exists. We lost all the telemetry, no longer exists. We lost all the blueprints for the rockets. No, I mean, it goes on and on and on. And these things do not hold water. And besides that, in terms of things like the moon landing, what we know to be true from a common sense standpoint in the world is once human beings achieve a thing, the next time they do it, it becomes more doable, and each time subsequent. And for some reason, the moon is the opposite of that. But to get back to the testing in the desert there, White Sands, Trinity, all these things were told. It was a one-sided operation. It was very controlled information in the same way Hiroshima was. There was one newsman let in there. Everyone else was locked out. So the source came from one place. And this is not scientifically believable. You can't replicate it. You can't peer review it. You can't do any of these things. You just basically have to take the word of the people providing the information, and I'm no longer prepared to do that.
Crow, what's new on your plate after this?
Well, Jason and I are thinking about doing another film. We have a couple ideas that we'd like to cover. Interestingly enough, we submitted Shoot the Moon to 20-some film festivals. At first, all we got was turndowns, and we thought that was going to win the day. But now, it's been picked up by a number of film festivals. It's won 4 laurels. The last one came out of Chicago, which is a pretty big film festival. So we may go down that road again. It's been pretty well received, and I have not seen a negative review yet. So that's one of the things. Other than that, every Thursday on Crow777Radio.com, we're going to keep delivering the way we have for the past 3-plus years.
And how do people see the movie Shoot the Moon?
Shoot the Moon is on Vimeo On Demand. If you search Shoot the Moon with Crow 777, and you should understand the word Crow has 2 R's. It's a play on my birth name, C-R-R-O-W 777. So you can search Vimeo On Demand for Shoot the Moon Crow 777 or Shoot the Moon Jason Lindgren, L-I-N-D-G-R-E-N, and you can rent the movie. That's the easiest way to see the bulk of everything I shot over that period. Quite a bit of it is on YouTube, but it's one-offs, you know, 2-minute clip here,
sure,
1-minute clip there, so it's much more tedious. And not only that, you never know if anything's going to be there tomorrow dealing with YouTube.
We're going to come back and take final phone calls in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And George Norrie back with you with our final segment with Crow. Crow's websites are linked up at coasttocoastam.com. He's got his YouTube channel, Facebook. How do people listen to your podcast, Crow?
They go to CRROW777radio.com. So that's basically Crow with 2 R's, Crow777radio.com. We release a new episode. The first hours are there for free, no login needed. If you want to become a member, you get the full run. And we keep a firewall up. Free speech lives behind that firewall of membership. That's why it's there.
What's the significance of the 3 7s? Anything special?
It's based on my birth name, all of which sum and have 7 letters.
Ah, interesting tech.
Basically, a poke in the eye to my corporate birth identity.
What is Sky Clock?
Sky Clock is how I started to try to describe the importance of what we see above our heads at night. And I often try to illustrate it in interesting ways to get people thinking. One of the things I do is I point out that when your cell phone or your wristwatch tells you it's noon, it's not noon, and it might get lucky or be close a couple times a year. Actual noon is at the apex of the arc of the sun for that day, called solar noon. And the sky clock is the clock for where we live. All the rest of it is artificial. Consider a time zone. Here's an idea. So we got time zones when the robber barons put in the train systems. Of course, they wanted their trains to be scheduled and run on time and all this, so they made up these artificial things called time zones. One of the time zones is something like 800 miles wide, I forget exactly, but if you consider that construct, a guy on the east side of that time zone would experience noon or sunrise at exactly the same time as the western border, and that's not possible. They're 800 miles apart. So it shows the artificial construct of how we've been pulled into reality when, in fact, the natural world is still here. The sky clock is still above our head. There was once a time when a clean division of a year was ruled by a moon. The moon. Get it? The moon did that. And actually, the Hebrew calendar, which I believe goes back 5,780 years right now, still recognizes the importance of the moon, as does the Chinese calendar. Marks the new year by the moon. I think the Hebrew calendar is actually solar luni or something like that, a little bit of both, but there's all that.
And by the way, since I respect your feelings about the moon landing specifically, I believe we did go to the moon. We had the astronauts there, and I do so because I knew Apollo 14 astronaut Edgar Mitchell, and I don't think he was lying to me, but I do respect your right to say how you feel.
Well, I'm not going to fight about it. I will say what I think is correct, and I invite people to try to rip a hole in it. But I think one of the things that we lost in the age of the internet was learning how to communicate with people that might have a different point of view
without fighting.
Right. When I was younger, two different points of view was a way for two people to learn. Now it's like, if you're red and I'm blue, we can't even be friends, and that is just ridiculousness from my point of view.
That is very sad. Kelly in Bend, Oregon, welcome to the program. Kelly, go ahead.
Yes. Hi. Hello, Crow. Nice
hey,
to meet
Kel.
You. I'm sorry to hear about your loss of like 100,000 subscribers. That's really sad on YouTube. I've been on YouTube for like 11 years now, and I've really enjoyed YouTube. They have taken like a program off of there multiple times. It's called like Legend of Atlantis. It's from like the 1970s. My question is, and this is probably, this is a tough question. It's like my kind of blindside you. I discovered a TV show on YouTube and all the episodes. It's called Project UFO, and it's has only like two seasons, and Ed Winter is the lead actor in season two. And, you know, these two Air Force guys, they go out and check UFO sightings and stuff. And when they go and to a town or somewhere, they'll take the camera and they take the film, and they send both of them, like, to a government facility. And then the film's inspected, and then they also take the camera apart and inspect it for any kind of tampering. So my question is, were the cameras inspected, you know, taking the pictures of the moon, were the cameras inspected for any kind of tampering? Were they sent off to any kind of facility where they were inspected and checked for something?
Yeah, I can answer that straight away. As it turned out, when I first accidentally, and it was an accident that I filmed the first lunar wave, I was looking at a 3-inch LCD window on the back of a Canon T2i. My first reaction was what everyone's is. How do I explain this away?
Yeah.
This can't be real. But I've been digital since before the internet. And months went on where it was bothering me. I was going back. But my mental block had me convinced it had to be something I did wrong or my equipment. I actually deleted the file into my recycle bin, went to bed, and that's when I had the epiphany. So here's how I can prove to you that from the outset we could demonstrate it wasn't equipment. As fate would have it, right before the lunar wave started, I panned below the moon with the camera, which I never do. I always keep centered on the moon to increase my odds because I'm using the moon as a backlight to try to see something. So I panned down, and it's like the only time I've ever done this. The lunar wave starts. I did not notice it at the time. I panned back up to the center of the moon, and the lunar wave caught up to the camera. And when I had the epiphany, I realized all at once, oh, my Lord, this is provably a filmed event. The camera pan shows me, and then everything fell in place because digital equipment does not fail in an organic way. You get your square pixels or your flat tear lines. It doesn't look organic. So to answer your first question, no, nothing went to a lab for to be checked if it was messed with. But my entire family, my friends, my wife, and everybody was aware that I was doing this the whole time, and I'm reasonably sure that at least one of them would be honest enough that if I faked it, they would say something. And by the way, on my YouTube channel, on the homepage, I take a pledge that where I swear to everyone that comes to my channel that I will not lie or run misleading footage on my channel, and I have never broken that oath, and I never will break that oath. So there's all that.
What do you think of the hollow earth theory?
It's not for me. I've tested it, and I've found problems, but I like that people are challenging where we exist. So more power to you if you're looking into that.
Mick in San Diego, welcome to the program. Hi, Mick.
Hi, gentlemen. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure thing.
There's four things that I could talk about. I'll just list them off. You can take it however you want to go. First, the mystery man on the knoll. He was my personal friend. I could reveal his identity tonight. Three different ET species I've been in direct contact with, nuclear weapons, and kudos on the lunar wave.
There you go. Let me ask you a question about the mystery man on the knoll. You're talking about the JFK?
Yes.
Assassination? And was he a shooter?
He was my best friend for many years. He died recently. That's the only reason I'm willing to talk about this. I kept his secret all those years.
I know, but was he a shooter?
That I can't tell you, because when I confronted him that he was the mystery man on the knoll with the evidence that I found, he threw up his hands that I didn't shoot him. And I think I believe him.
Now, what kind of occupation did he have at the time in 1963?
He was in the Central Intelligence Agency.
Aha. Uh-huh. Interesting. Yeah, no name, no need to give us a name, but...
Well, you must be older than you sound, because that happened before I was born, and I'm getting to be beyond 55 now.
I was a little puppy when that happened at 13 years old, a long time ago, but that's fascinating. Did you ever look at the JFK conspiracy, Carl?
We did, and actually, when the Internet was young, some people had done some top-notch video work to demonstrate that the Zapruder film, which wasn't seen until about 10 years after the fact, had been constructed, and they could prove the video had been messed with because they did surveys of Dealey Plaza. I don't accept that either. We've challenged it, and it's like everything else. You know, here's a measure. When a new truck or a new car comes out in the world, you can know things about it that are not arguable. You can know the color of it, horsepower, how many doors, the name of that model. A real thing that exists in this world, you can know things about. And what we tend to find or have found over these years of research is that any mystery that has been levied out into mainstream media is nothing but a thing that can be ripped apart for any mind who takes the time to focus on it. I don't accept any of that.
Let's take some more calls as they continue rolling in. David's with us in Tucson, Arizona. David, good morning. Go ahead.
Good morning, George. Thank you for taking the call.
Sure thing.
My question for Crow is, if the moon is a luminary object, which I consider to be its own light source, how do you explain an eclipse across it?
Well, this is. I'm actually glad you asked this. I've been working on what's called a solar eclipse for years, and I was trying to do one simple thing. Basically, what we're told is the sun is 93 million miles away from us, the moon roughly a quarter of a million. I'm rounding numbers there for people.
Yeah, no, you're close. You're very close.
So what happens, according to the mainstream view, is that moon a quarter-ish million miles away comes between the sun and our point of view, the sun being 93 million miles away, and just by some random impossible chance they're exactly the same size. But I set out to do a single thing. I said, if the moon is covering the sun, it is being backlit by the brightest thing we know in existence called the sun, so I should be able to detect the moon going into the eclipse, and I'm here to tell you, you can't do it. I tried over a number of them. The full eclipse of, I think it was August 21, 2017, I hope I have that date right. It was the big full eclipse that we had here in the United States. I finally proved it outright. I used multiple scope systems, multiple camera systems, full spectrum, visual spectrum, filter systems, and I tried to do one simple thing, get a picture of the moon before it broke the plane of the sun. You can't do it. And as we began to get into this further, I finally came away after multiple eclipse attempts to do this, and I announced that the moon plays no role in what we call a solar eclipse, and that the ancient Indians are probably much closer to the truth. with the idea of nodes or Ketu and Rahu. So there's all that in a nutshell.
So what do you think we are looking at when this is happening?
I think things called nodes, which are defined in the Indian cosmology, they're also referred to sometimes as the head and the tail of the dragon, are what's blocking the sun. We need more research because the last full eclipse or last solar eclipse I had a shot at was the one I just described in 2017.
Yeah, I saw
problem
that.
With this is you got to wait a long time between observations, but I didn't miss any eclipse of any kind for the whole period of time I described to you, but I stand firmly and I can demonstrate that the moon plays no role in a solar eclipse.
Now, why would they distort that for us, Carl?
You know, you got people questioning what our very Earth looks like right now. And from my point of view, and the reason I give so much latitude and support to people that are doing this, is because what leads to a community doing this is people being tired of half-truths and non-truths that feel like I do. A human right, you know, a human birthright is to know the things that we should be able to know. How long have we been here? How did we get here? What are we supposed to do here? All these critical questions that have got lost in the age of entertainment, where all this content designed to go in and hold your mind and lead to a wasted life is doing just that. But there are a number of us out there going back to the basics and trying to be brave to challenge things that are supposed to be unchallengeable, trying to be polite and correct about it so that hopefully we're not fighting, that we're moving in a direction that's helpful. It's the best I can do.
Carl, we're almost out of time. The clock is ticking. Give folks an opportunity to look at your films, listen to your podcast. Go ahead, tell them about it.
All right. My podcast can be found at crow777radio.com. That is crrow777radio.com. If you'd like to see darn near everything I ever shot over that nearly five-year period through telescopes and high-end optics, search for Shoot the Moon on Vimeo On Demand. Typically, if you search Shoot the Moon with Crow 777 or Shoot the Moon with Jason Lindgren, my co-host, you'll get there, but it's on Vimeo On Demand. Other than that, you can find me at Crow 777 Radio on Facebook. I only announce things on Twitter. I don't communicate on Twitter, and the same is true of YouTube. I do zero. Since the kind of censorship apocalypse, all I do is post videos there now. I don't use it. So there's all that. And I want to thank you so much, George, for being so even-handed and inviting me on.
You're very welcome, and thank you. Keep in touch with us in case you come across anything else, okay?
I'd be happy to come back.
All right. Crow777, and again, his website linked up at coasttocoastam.com. The rest of you that have been on hold, I am sorry that we couldn't get to you, but the clock has got us. On our next Coast to Coast program, look for our friend David Bloom to join us talking about the alcohol-based fuels and what's happening with outages all over the planet. And then later on, we're going to take a little walk on the paranormal side with Jeanette Lucas. Yeah, I'm looking forward to that, too. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Latasur, Stephanie Smith, Chris Burrows, Tim Banal, and George Knapp, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.